Maybe you've had one of those moments when you're looking for something in the refrigerator and run across another container you can't quite identify. So you open it, and you're greeted with a strong smell and an unappetizing sight. Time has changed whatever that food was, and not for the better. But good things can come to those who wait. Letting food and drink sit for a while can be delicious if done correctly. Fermented food and beverages are becoming more popular over time. Witness the growth of the Fun with Fermentation Festival in Eugene, which had to move to a bigger site this year. It runs Saturday 11 to 4 at the Veterans Club in Eugene and is presented by the Willamette Valley Sustainable Foods Alliance, where Kylie Christensen is a board member. Kylie, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Oh, thank you so much, Jeff, for having me.
Give us the big picture. What is the Willamette Valley Sustainable Foods Alliance all about?
So we started in 2005. We are a nonprofit trade association comprised of about 50 member businesses within the natural foods community in Lane County. And our mission is to establish recognition of the Willamette Valley as a premier source of natural foods through shared values, relationships, education, and business practices.
Well, that's pretty impressive, though. You got the 50 different businesses together.
Yeah. And so our membership base ranges from farmers to processors to distributors to retailers. We're kind of trying to get the whole food chain, if you will, involved. And the board offers these businesses marketing, networking, and educational support throughout the year in order to further their businesses.
And I'm just going to guess that board members like yourself are people who own or at least operate some of these businesses?
The board members are all volunteers. We're a complete volunteer working board. So board members, yes, are employees or owners of our member businesses. We do have two what we call at-large board members. So these are members within our community or individuals within our community that we feel would benefit from being on the board, and so our membership has voted two of them on.
How hard do you hold the businesses to that line of sustainable food? I mean, this is a sustainable foods alliance, so I mean, what are the sorts of benchmarks that a business has to hit to be a member?
So we have a sustainability pledge that our membership reads and signs at the beginning of every year. So membership is an annual basis. And, you know, quickly in a nutshell, what we're looking for is that they're just taking steps to become more sustainable. So what's sustainable for, you know, for a business like Hummingbird Wholesale might look like might be very different from, say, a brewery, which we have breweries as our member businesses too. So it's relative to what you're able to do within your own organization. And so we offer guidelines and other organizations, you know, other information to our member businesses for them to become more sustainable.
All right. So a lot going on there, it sounds like. Is the Fun with Fermentation Festival one of the bigger events of the year for the Sustainable Foods Alliance?
This is our biggest fundraiser of the year, without question, yes. And not only do we benefit from this, but we also choose about one or two other nonprofits to also benefit and get proceeds from this event also.
So if a person is just a little curious about what goes on in a Fun with Fermentation Festival, can I fill them in from the square one angle?
So it is specifically a day of fermentation, education, and sampling. It's all about raising awareness of the benefits of fermented foods, how to make them at home, and where to find them around town, and resources for how to educate yourself about the benefits of fermented foods and businesses that are making fermented foods. And so it's a sampling event. We have about 18 member businesses that will table there. And you come in, you pay one fee to get in. It's a complete suggested donation of $5 with two cans of food for Lane County as an entrance fee. Once you're in, you get to sample for free all of the fermented wares that our member businesses have. And then additionally, throughout the day, we have four fermentation demonstrations going on as well.
Fermentation obviously is a process that takes a while, so you have to show them one end of the process or the other, I'm thinking here. But what are the demonstrations generally about?
So it really varies from year to year. This year we're starting off with one called The Simplicity of Home Fermentation. So really functioning as an introductory class to really show patrons how simple and easy it is to start fermenting at home. The one after that will be a pickled vegetables demo. So we'll talk about sauerkraut and pickles and a couple other fermented vegetables. One that's really exciting this year that's actually new to us is kvass, is what it's called. And it's a non-alcoholic fermented beverage that's made from rye and commonly flavored with fruit or herbs. So this is a very popular Eastern European fermented beverage. So we'll learn how to make that as well. And then the last one is a mead demonstration with Falling Sky. It's a collaboration between Falling Sky Brewing and Nectar Creek Honey Wine from Corvallis.
Did you say mead or mead?
Mead.
Okay.
The fermented honey wine.
Okay. That's where I thought we were going. So for the folks who might fear fermentation just a little bit, what are the things that attract people who do ferment foods to this process?
Well, I would say probably the end result and the benefits that you get from eating fermented foods. I guess to start, it is an ancient method. Fermentation is an ancient method of preserving foods without the use of refrigeration or canning. So it's how you are able to be able to eat a lot of foods in the winter that weren't growing at that time. And then as a result of the fermentation process, it preserves the nutrients in the food. So it keeps those nutrients intact. And then it also breaks down the product that you're fermenting a little bit, so it makes it more digestible, easier for your body to absorb the nutrients. Specifically, it promotes the health of growth of healthy bacteria, also known as flora, in your intestines. And then it also helps support immune function in addition to many other processes in your bodies. And it's also been known to, you know, the at-home consumer, you know, I've heard many times and I've read in many different books that it can also support aid in allergy support as well. So it creates an environment that keeps the bad bacteria out of your food and the good bacteria in your food.
Kylie Christensen is our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. She is a board member with the Willamette Valley Sustainable Foods Alliance, and we're talking about the Fun with Fermentation Festival to be held tomorrow, 11 to 4, at the Veterans Club in Eugene. Join us here on the Exchange. Maybe you've had some fermented foods, or maybe you tried fermenting some foods yourself and can talk about the process. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, Eugene included. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So I gather that with this year's event, you're actually moving to a new venue because it has gotten that big.
We are, and it's, you know, although we were so sad to leave the venue that we've had for the last 5 years, the Wow Hall in Eugene, they've been a huge supporter for us. It is very exciting that this event is growing so much in the eyes of the public. So that's why we did have to move it to the Veterans Club, which is also a wonderful venue. They've been a huge supporter of us for years as well.
So, Kylie, and granted, I'm not encouraging anybody to start fermenting right here and right now with the stuff they have in their kitchen on the radio, but for people who are thinking about getting into this, what's a good first dish or first thing to work on fermenting?
I really think the easiest thing to start making would be sauerkraut or kimchi, which is a lot like sauerkraut. It just has many more vegetables in it, simply because it is so simple and easy to make. And it doesn't require a lot of, you don't have to be checking in on it, you know, regularly, like every single day. You can kind of let it go for a while and check on it here and there. So with those products, you're using the natural bacteria that lives on the skins of the vegetables, and you cut them up really fine, and then you put them in a bucket with ample amounts of salt, and you'll find different recipes either online or in some fermentation books. Depending on how much vegetables you use, you'll need to use quite a lot amount of salt, and it's that salt that starts breaking down the vegetables and utilizing the natural bacteria that live on the skins of the vegetables, thus preserving the food and making a healthy end product that's easy to digest.
This sounds like throwing salt on snow. In a sense. I mean, it begins to break it up.
Exactly. I mean, in very simple terms, that is exactly what's going on with that particular fermentation product.
All right, so sauerkraut, a good place to start. Are you going to start with cabbage and what other sorts of vegetables?
Well, for sauerkraut, yeah, cabbage is great. At home, I just do cabbage and salt. I mean, that's all I put in mine. I've also put, you know, onions or garlic in it, something a little to spice it up. If you want to, you know, get a little bit more inventive, you can also add grain, you know, seeds or herbs or other flavors to it as well. And then with kimchi, kimchi is very, very exciting because pretty much the world is your oyster with the vegetables that you choose to put in there. So you can put carrots, daikon, radish, you know, garlic, onion, ginger, you know, you can beets. We've put beets in there before as well. You can slice them, you can dice them, you know, you can really get very creative and inventive with it.
So it just is whatever the person preparing it, and it's not, I can't call it cooking, I guess. Is it ever actually heated in any way?
No, that's the thing about fermented foods is they are not heated because you want to keep that bacteria in there live, so it keeps the food preserved and healthy, and so you want to be eating that live food, which means you don't want to be heating it. Now, when we talk about fermented beverages like beer and, you know, wine and mead, that is a little bit different because those obviously are heated, but they're heated before the fermentation process takes place. So they add their yeast to the product after it's been heated.
All right, which gets to the question then of intervention, which I'm sure, first of all, when the squeamish hear things like bacteria, they'll get a little nervous about this. But
yeah.
How then do you store these things? When you're making, for example, sauerkraut or kimchi, how long is this going to be stored? Does it have to be stored airtight, or does it need to be airspace in there, and sorts of temperatures and other conditions in which you're going to store them?
Yeah, so by no means am I an expert. I'm an at-home fermentation person, so
okay.
I'm not a professional by any means.
Stipulated.
But with those two products, it's very important that the ambient temperature is, you know, about 60, 65 degrees, so you want it to be a little bit cooler. And, in fact, you don't actually want an airtight container. You want the air to be able to move in and out of the product that you're fermenting. And so using kimchi and sauerkraut as our examples, you would put all of your sliced vegetables into a glass. I like to use big 2-gallon glass containers, or also known as a crock. They also make ceramic crocks as well. And so you put it in there, and then you take a plate and you set a plate. Of course, it has to be very, very clean because you don't want bad bacteria to be getting into your clean environment. You put a plate on top of it and then put, like, you know, a heavy one, fill up a 1-gallon container with water to put on the plate. So it puts a lot of pressure onto that plate. And what will happen over time is that weighted plate will start to help the process of breaking down the sauerkraut, and you'll start seeing water come out. So about every 2 or 3 days, you'll want to check it and take some of that top water off. And we usually let ours go for, honestly, 3 or 4 weeks. But it really depends on the flavor profile that the person making it is going for. So we pretty much taste it every 2 or 3 days, and when it tastes like it's good and it's done, then we go ahead and put it into jars and stick it in the fridge so it stops that fermentation process.
And then how long is it likely to keep in the fridge?
Oh, I mean, you can keep it up to a year as long as it's not open and you haven't, and you know, put a dirty utensil or anything in there, at least, if not longer. I mean, it stays for the fridge very long.
We're talking about fermentation with Kylie Christensen from the Willamette Valley Sustainable Foods Alliance. She's a board member, and the Food Alliance is putting on the Fun with Fermentation Festival this weekend in Eugene, tomorrow, in fact, at the, where is it again now? It's the Veterans Hall, right?
Yeah, the Veterans Memorial Building, which is also known as the Vets Club in Eugene, and that is at 1626 Willamette Street, so very easy to find.
1626 Willamette. You can join us here in the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Bill in Eugene, welcome to the Exchange.
Hi there, thanks a lot. I have two questions. I spoke to somebody that does this a lot, and they told me you can actually take any vegetable, it's fresh and raw but clean, and mash it, like with a potato masher, and just put it in water and let it sit at room temperature for 3 or 4 days and not have to add salt, because I have a salt problem, obviously, some people do. And he said that would start the fermenting process, and I was just wondering if that's any truth to that. And also, I know that when you buy pills, to add bacteria to your stomach, I forget what they're called, some of them tell you to eat certain types of food with them, so the bacteria have a better chance of staying alive in your stomach and growing, being healthier.
Are these probiotics you're taking?
Yeah, and I was wondering if that's true. I mean, what is there a certain kind of food you could eat that when you eat the stuff you make, like meat or something, that you eat that make the bacteria grow better in your stomach.
All right, so any vegetable and probiotics. Thanks for the call, Bill. Appreciate it. Kylie, what do you say?
Well, you know, I haven't actually heard of just mashing the vegetables up in water. But if you kind of think about what Bill mentioned, I mean, that just starts the process of breaking the food down just like the salt would do. I haven't read about that, and I haven't tried it myself, but it seems like it would make sense. I don't know what benefits that the end result would be. You know, I don't think it would be the same types of, it wouldn't necessarily be the same types of beneficial bacteria that would be in the sauerkraut, if you will, that you make with salt.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it would hurt you, you know, as long as it tastes good.
I was going to say, let's caution people not to go too far out there, though,
yeah,
without getting some kind of recipe or some sort of guide,
yeah,
to let them know how to proceed. And then the other question Bill had was about probiotics and foods that should or should not be consumed with those. Any knowledge there?
You know, not for me personally, no. I don't know of anything that you wouldn't want to eat when you're eating fermented foods, again, outside of the fact that it wouldn't taste very good. For me, what I've read is when you're wanting to get benefits out of fermented foods, you want to be eating it on a regular basis. So you want to constantly be introducing that positive, healthy, or flora bacteria into your intestines so it regularly is in there.
All right, it sounds like there's a fair amount of intervention in the process when you're talking about the cabbage or the kimchi, you know, tasting and taking the top water off, stuff like that, that these are steps you need to move along. If you're not careful, if you don't intervene at the right intervals, are you likely to get something that is not fermented but just plain moldy? Or
Yeah, exactly. So that's one of the most common problems. So what you do by adding the salt to the sauerkraut is that you're creating a pH environment that is a great environment for the healthy bacteria. So say you're going in there to scoop out the water. If you're using a dirty container or a container that hasn't been sanitized to scoop out that water, you're potentially introducing harmful bacteria into that environment. And then it's going to take your sauerkraut much longer to try to fight off that harmful bacteria. And it might not work. It might then succumb to the harmful bacteria and start turning moldy.
Let us take another call. Here's Kirsten in Applegate. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Kylie Christensen from the Willamette Valley Sustainable Foods Alliance. We're talking about fermentation.
Hi. I do a lot of fermentation, and I just was wanting to comment a little bit, and I think Kylie has hit some of this, but with Bill's comment about just sticking the vegetables in water.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I've done a lot of experimentation. I actually have a book about this coming out. So the salt, part of what it does is exactly what Kylie's saying, is it's changing the pH and making it a suitable, really good environment for the good bacteria, and it gives them that upper hand. It also is working with the vegetables themselves and changing them so that they stay a little bit of crispy. So what happens with no salt is you're walking that line between fermentation and compost for a little while, and you're going to get a really mushy product. What I recommend for somebody like Bill is to do a really high-quality, high-mineralized salt, like, you know, some of these Celtic sea salts are lower in actual sodium chloride and higher in the minerals. And also use a lot less salt. Some recipes out there really make it sound like you need a whole lot of salt to make this happen. Sometimes just enough to taste it while you're mixing your vegetables. Just taste it in there. Know it's in there. Like a chip, maybe not even as salty as a chip, will give you a really great product, too.
Okay, good ideas all around. Kirsten, I'm going to put you on hold because I want Reed to get your phone number, if that's okay, because when your book comes out, we certainly would be interested in talking to you.
Yeah, and I would love your information, too. That'd be great.
All right,
absolutely.
All right, thanks so much, Kirsten. So here we go with you. And then, so Kylie, back to you then.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond cabbage and kimchi, what's a good next step for people to once they feel like they've conquered cabbage or kimchi, where's a good next place to go?
Well, sourdough starters are a really good next place to go, or another bread starter of some sort. Those are pretty simple and pretty easy to do in your ambient temperature within your kitchen, you know, so you don't necessarily need colder temperatures. I jumped into my fermentation world straight off the bat with making kombucha. It was something that I had been reading about and honestly couldn't afford to buy every day because it was so expensive. So I kind of jumped into the deep end with kombucha and make that on a regular basis. And once you understand how to make it, it is very simple. I think, you know, cleanliness is always key with whatever fermented food that you're making. And then, you know, making sure that you do have the right amount of sugar or salt or yeast, you know, to put in there.
So flat out, I mean, can you kill yourself if you're not careful with fermenting foods, or at least make yourself unintentionally drunk as opposed to deliberately drunk?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, if we're talking with beverages like kombucha, for example, it does have about, you know, generally speaking, about 0.5% mm-hmm. alcohol, 0.05% alcohol, so very, very low. But if you allow that fermentation process to continue, to keep going, and you don't either stop it by A, drinking it, or B, putting it in your fridge, then yes, it will ferment into alcohol. You can definitely do that.
And with the foods, you need to be careful, though. I mean, it sounds like you need to follow some clear guidelines, because we've been talking about good and bad bacteria. You want to make sure you encourage the one and discourage the other.
Exactly. I mean, this is something that I would definitely recommend research before doing. There are a ton of resources out there that are very simple and very easy to guide the at-home fermenter through. But, yeah, always make sure you're researching what you're making and how to make it so that it is safe for you and your family.
Or just come out to the Fun with Fermentation Festival, the 5th annual, January 11th, that's tomorrow, 11 to 4, at the Vets Club in Eugene. Kylie Christensen from the Sustainable Food Alliance in Willamette Valley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.